This is tape one of an interview with Mr. John W. Johnstone, Jr. in his office at Olin Corporation in Norwalk, Connecticut. The interview takes place on February 11, 1997, by James. Mr. Johnstone, I know that you were born on November 19, 1932, in Brooklyn, New York. Can you tell me something about your parents, your family, and your early childhood?
Sure. My father was born in Cabin Island in 1899. Came to New York when he was 21. Worked in New York City for several years and went on to the New York City Police Department in 1929. About that time, he and my mother married. My mother was a first-generation Irish lady. Her mother and father were born in Ireland. She was born here and grew up in New York City. Time I was born, we were living in Bay Ridge, which was kind of amusing to find an Irish person mixed up with all those Swedes and Norwegians. But in 1932, we had rather a difficult time, which I didn't realize, although my mother was expecting me. My father was shot in a holdup and was in the hospital for many months, survived it and lived until 91, so sometimes things don't appear what they are when they occur. So I had a very interesting growing up period We lived in Brooklyn for about 4 years, and then my father and mother bought a house in Queens, so he was still living in New York City. At that time, New York City policemen had to live within the city limits, but we were out as far as you could get on Long Island almost and still be in the city. So I grew up really in the very early periods, not quite rural, but certainly not urban neighborhood that over time just grew and became full of houses. As a matter of fact, we had a bird sanctuary next to our home, and I never realized how it ever didn't become a sanctuary anymore. All of a sudden, houses were built on the site, so even then there were environmental problems. Growing up for me was a good experience. I was an only child, and that probably has its good aspects to it and perhaps its bad aspects. Obviously, you don't have brothers and sisters, but in a sense, it forces you much more outside of the family to try to get some bonding relationships. So I had a wide myriad of friends growing up, many of whom lived just within two or three or four blocks of each other. I went to the New York City public school system. I went to PS 156, which was about three or four blocks away. And when it came time to go to high school, there were several options that I had, and I chose to go to Far Rockaway High School, which was out further on Long Island, and I would go there every day on the Long Island Railroad. Family situation was comfortable. Obviously, New York City policemen didn't make a lot of money, but growing up was a time in which I had a fair amount of discipline in the family. But we really didn't want for anything, and I learned to work at an early age. I started doing yard work for people and doing all sorts of shoveling snow. And you did things to get extra money. But I'll tell you, growing up in New York City at that time was really a marvelous experience. The things that we hear about New York today in terms of inability to move around and discomfort and crime just didn't exist then. As a boy growing up, every Saturday I'd put my nickel in the bus and drive into Jamaica and go to the YMCA, where I used to belong to clubs, and you'd swim and play basketball. You could go into New York City. I mean, I used to go to New York City when I was 10 or 11 years old, and I'd go into the museums, and sometimes we'd go to the movies, and it was a very, very comfortable experience. I guess if there's one regret, I think, now about young people growing up there, it's not easy for them to move around. They're very uncomfortable. And that's sad because growing up in a big metropolitan area really had so many advantages and so many things you could do and see.
So you went to high school out on Long Island. Did you develop any particular career interests? interest at that
time? It was rather interesting. That's a good question, and it's sort of where it starts. I decided to pursue what they called in New York State in those days an academic Regents curriculum, which meant I would take the Regents exams. Regents in those days were tests that were given at the completion of certain courses, and then they were used heavily by New York State colleges and universities to determine your skill base for college entrance. And so I pursued a Regents career, and
was that the particular encouragement of your parents? Or?
Yeah, I think so. I had a view, and I think my parents did, that I might go to college. I think when I entered high school, my father had completed in Ireland about 9 years of education. My mother had gone through high school and then had gone to secretarial school and worked as a secretary in New York City for a number of years. Just before they were married and a short while after they were married. And by then, now, the war, obviously, in 1946 was over, and people were starting to think about what was happening. A lot of veterans were coming back. So colleges were sort of on everybody's mind. And while we didn't have a huge amount of money, I felt that college was certainly within my grasp. In terms of the academic pursuits, I decided that I would at least try to prepare myself for college education. We had several family members who had a strong influence on my education and also some of the things I did in later life. One of them, whose name was John McManus, was an engineer with AT&T. And obviously he had been through as best I can remember 4 years of engineering school, and he probably was the one person that I knew that spent a lot of time talking to me about what I might do from a career standpoint. And I can remember today sitting down with him maybe when I was a junior in high school and talking to him about what the opportunities might be. And ironically, because he was a mechanical engineer, his advice was that he believed at that time, so this was, say, 1948, 1949, that the field of chemistry was going to open, just that the door was going to open and that whole industry was going to take off. And of course, indeed, he was correct. But I guess that was one aspect of it. The other was a science teacher whose name was Levinson, who taught chemistry at Far Rockaway High School, who I think also had a very profound effect on me. As a matter of fact, my wife also took chemistry from the same professor. My wife and I went to high school with him. He made the course interesting, he made it exciting, and then I had this outside influence of John McManus saying to me, you really ought to think about chemistry. It might be a place that you could find a niche. And so, as I came through this high school experience, I took physics and math and chemistry. I never did get any biology, but I took all of the curricular courses required for Regents, but I got quite as much science as I could. And I found, while I wasn't obviously brilliant, that I liked the courses and I was able to maintain decent averages in them, and I was able to pass the Regents exams, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. During that time, also, I became very active in scouting. Again, I think encouraged by my parents, and certainly supported by them, because my dad frequently, if he was available, would drive us on camping trips and things like that. And I have said to many organizations that I've spoken to that probably scouting at an early age gives a young person the greatest opportunity to develop leadership skills about anything I've been involved with. You know, at 13 or 14 years old, you can be a patrol leader and you can assume leadership roles and you can develop your leadership skills, and you learn at a very early age with your peers what works and what doesn't work. So those sort of were the growing up years. They were very interesting times. As I said earlier, the war had ended. It was a go-go period. Veterans were all coming back. There was a lot of excitement about where America was going. And it was a good time, as I said, to be growing up in New York City.
Well, after high school, you went to college. How did you happen to pick the one you went to?
Well, When I went to high school, I had been fairly active in sports. As I said, I used to go down to the YMCA in Jamaica a lot, and I played basketball down there, did a lot of swimming. Really learned how to swim there, probably. And when I got to high school, I started, I went out and tried out for the swim team, which I made. And I swam probably for about 2 years until one day, the basketball coach came down and said, look, you're in the wrong part of the building. As you know, I'm 6'9". I was about 6'7½ then. He says, you're in the wrong part of the building down here. He said, you ought to come upstairs with the big guys. And so we talked about it, and I had played some basketball. I had played in church league, and I had played in schoolyards and that sort of stuff. And so I joined the basketball team when I was a junior in high school. And I had, I would say, an interesting learning experience. Most of the kids that were on that team that were seniors had been playing for a couple of years. However, in our final year, we won the Queen's Championship and went and played in Madison Square Garden. Well, that basketball career, because I was now 6'8", almost 6'9", started to attract some interest. Now I'll tell you the story about college. So there were some people that were good friends of our family whose daughter taught at Oneonta State Teachers College in central New York. And in my junior year, at her invitation, my mother and my father, and her mother and father, and myself, went up to Oneonta and spent a weekend with her. We had never been up there. It was a beautiful ride, about a 4-hour ride from New York. And we visited downtown, walked around, and around 6 o'clock that night, the phone rang at her home, and I could hear her talking to somebody on the other end of the phone. After she hung up, she said, that was a very interesting phone call. She said, you know, Oneonta is a pretty small town. It had a department store called Brazee's, which was an old family department store, and she said, there's a fellow there by the name of Sherman Decker who runs the men's department, and he saw you walking through the department store. Well, Sherm also was on the athletic board of control at Hartwick. And so he said to Betty, he said, I saw you walking around with this big guy. Does he play basketball? And Betty said, I told him you did. And he said, do you think he might be interested in Hartwick or maybe even coming up and talking to the coach? So she said, I don't know, I'll ask him. So to make a long story short, the next morning I went up to Hartwick and saw the campus, which was a little tiny school and had about 350 students. Visited with the basketball coach, and he said, look, why don't you come back in the spring and spend a long weekend with us on your spring break, and we'll show you what we're doing up here, what kind of a basketball program. We'll get the chance to meet some of the academic people. I was looking at several other schools, including the University of New Haven and several others, and they said they could probably provide me a scholarship, which might include tuition and books, and perhaps board during training season, and then I'd have to provide my room and my spending money. So I came up in the spring, really liked what I saw, kind of a neat town. Again, I had grown up in the city, and now I was in a small little town in central New York. The people were terrific, and I decided to go to Hartwick. And again, as I said earlier, this John McManus had a heavy influence on me, and he really suggested that I think about majoring in chemistry. And so I matriculated in 1950, and that's how I got to Hartwick College. Kind of an interesting route. And I did play basketball there for 4 years and was fairly successful. Hartwick had a pretty good basketball team. This was a little tiny school, had about 350 students then. It now has about 1,600, and I'm chairman of the Board of Trustees, so I've come a long way from my trip to Oneonta in 1949.
Just happened to be tall and easily spotted as you walked through the store.
Exactly, right, yeah.
You did follow your friend's advice and studied chemistry.
Yeah, I studied chemistry, and it was, I'll tell you, it was very interesting because obviously a little school like that doesn't have a lot of professors, doesn't have a lot of labs, but we had two chemistry instructors, and I took most of my courses from one of them, and I took all the basic fundamentals. They offered a BA degree. They didn't offer a BS degree in those days. And I also, as I kind of got into things, you know, you you have your normal curriculum. I took physics in my first year, and I decided I liked that, and I could get more science if I took both physics and chemistry. So I ended up with a double major. My grades in physics were better than chemistry, but be that as it may, and I took all the normal math courses. The professors were terrific because I played basketball, you had practice, we traveled, and they'd let me go up and work in the laboratories whenever I wanted. I could go up there at night, or I could go up there in the afternoon, or I'd go up there early in the morning, particularly when you were doing quantitative analysis. This was before the days of the sophisticated electronic scales, where, you, as you know, you had to balance everything. It took forever. And so I got really a lot of cooperation. And also to help myself through school, I had to work, and I would I got 50 cents an hour for sweeping floors, and I really swept them. This was in the days when people said, oh, basketball players don't sweep floors, they just get paid. That was baloney. So I took the double major, majored in chemistry and physics, took as much chemistry as was available, took two seminar courses in both of those, which were sort of free-structured with the professors, and began to think about really what I wanted to do when I left college. Graduation was to be in 1950. I had an idea that I really wanted to enter the petrochemical business. It was, at that time, just starting to explode. And so I started sending out resumes. When you go to a small school like Cartwright, not many recruiters come by. And that was discouragement. For example, P&G did come by, and I took some exams from them. Never really got a second ask for an interview. They eventually became my largest customer, which is kind of funny. And the 7 years I lived in Cincinnati, and they're still one of Olin's largest customers and have been for a long, long time. But I interviewed with several of the then petrochemical companies. I interviewed with Sinclair, which somehow I think ended up to be ARCO. I interviewed with Mobil. I can't remember who else I interviewed, but there were several. I had one or two other interviews, and nothing was sort of clicking, and I was getting a little discouraged. This was in the late winter of 1950, with graduation coming up. My physics professor said to me, John, he said, you know, you really have a pretty good propensity for physics. You've gotten good grades. He said, I graduated from St. Lawrence. And he said, I wondered whether you might be interested in maybe getting an assistantship at St. Lawrence if I could talk to them up there. By then, I didn't see any job jumping up on the horizon. And I said, well, you know, that certainly would be interesting. To make a long story short, he did arrange for me to get an assistantship. Sort of sight unseen, he talked and sent up my resume. About that time, now it's about, let's call it February of 50, I had found an ad in the ACS magazine, 0 to 5 year sales trainee, Old Bury Electrochemical Company in New York City. I lived in New York, my family was there, so I answered the ad. And I didn't hear anything for 2 or 3 weeks, and finally got a letter back saying, have your letter. We'd be interested in talking to you. What are your plans for coming to the city? So over Easter, I had an interview with Old Bury. Old Bury then was owned by Albright and Wilson. Very interesting company. It was about a $10 million company then, which sounds tiny by today's standards. It was very profitable. It was the first phosphorus producer in North America. Phosphorus furnaces were built up there in 1896. So I had an interview in New York, which seemed to go pretty well. And then I went back to school after Easter, and it was just quiet, nothing. So I'm looking at this assistantship, and I'm saying, well, what the hell am I going to do? Old Bury finally dropped me another letter and said they'd like me to come down for a second interview. So I guess it was sort of late April I went back down to New York City and had a second interview with them. They offered me a job, and it was perfect because by then I was fairly serious with my wife. she was living in New York. My family was in New York, so I could live at home. And so I turned down the assistantship to St. Lawrence, and on July 1st of 1954, started work with Oldbury Electrochemical Company in New York City.
You never gave any thought to professional basketball?
No, it's a good question. I did have an opportunity to try out for what then was the Syracuse Nationals, who later became the Cincinnati Royals. The starting salary for rookies was exactly the same salary I started for Oldbury, $4,200 a year.
Things have changed a bit, haven't they?
$350 a month. And I figured as I looked at that, I went up there once and visited with them. Dolph Shays was playing for him at the time, and I can remember clearly he was playing with a cast. He had broken his arm. And I was saying to myself, you know, I've broken both arms as a kid. I don't know that I need to do that second time. And the money wasn't that good. I was a pretty good player. I wasn't a superstar, but I did pretty well, and I had some school records. But I really was much more focused on really getting started with a career.
And you moved to New York for your first job with this in sales. Did you have any idea of moving into management early on?
Not at that stage of the game. I think, you know, the younger you are, probably the shorter your goal time horizons are. I think as you get older, the maturation period forces you to think in longer horizons. As I said, I was just thankful to get a job. 1950, for some reason, was a tough time. There were not a lot of new jobs around. Things were not easy. So I was very, very grateful to get a job. I didn't know diddly-what about sales and marketing. I had not taken any business courses at all because I had taken all these physics and math courses and chemistry courses. I had had a lot of leadership experiences at Hartwick, which is one of the unique beauties of a small school. A small college has as many opportunities as a large university, but less people competing for them. I mean, there's one class president, and there's only maybe 70 kids in your class. At another school, there might be 10,000 kids in your class. So I ended up getting involved in school politics and the fraternity. I was president of my fraternity. I was president of my junior and senior class. I was captain of the basketball team as a junior. So I really did have a lot of chances, again, to develop leadership skills coming off that platform of Boy Scouts, as I said earlier. But I didn't know a whole lot about selling. And Oldbury Electrochemical had their plant operations in Niagara Falls. And their sales offices were in Lower New York at 19 Rector Street, just down the street from Allied Chemical. And their training technique for a new salesman was they had a big file full of cards. There might have been 1,000 of them. And what they would do, first they brought me in, spent a couple of weeks inside learning how the sales office operated. As a matter of fact, I could type. I had learned to type in high school. So the order clerk who went on vacation in August, I filled in for him, and I typed all the orders. I'd get them on the phone, and I'd send them up to Niagara Falls. So you really got to learn what the mechanics of the business were. And then this big card catalog file was full of little teeny companies that you never heard of, a lot of them export companies. And all the Oldbury people wanted me to do was just go call on those guys and try to sell them something. Most of them had no interest in buying what we were selling. But it was a maturation kind of a program to get you out sort of see what was happening. And I spent about 2 months in the office, and then I went up to the plant in Niagara Falls for a month and spent time in each of the departments. Two major product lines, as I said earlier, were phosphorus and phosphorus derivatives. We made phosphorus sulfides and chlorides. We were the only producer in the United States of sodium chlorate. Then we were building a second plant down in Columbus, Mississippi. And the people at Niagara Falls, again, were terrific. I can see you watching your tape. Are you worried we're running over?
I'm watching.
But I spent about a month up there, and they'd rotate me through each of the departments, and I'd spend time with the superintendent, and I'd see how they operated and what they made. And there were several people there who were really very, very kind and took me under their wing, particularly the technical service people who spent a lot of time. They invited me to their homes for dinner. I had a boss who didn't believe in airplanes. This is 1954. I went to Niagara Falls on my first business trip by train from Grand Central Station, and then dropped the car off in downtown Niagara Falls at 5 o'clock and get off at 8. I went up there for a month, didn't come home. During that period, we had a sales seminar where the whole sales department, which was three plus myself, were four, a sales manager, vice president of sales, came up and had a long meeting with the management of Old Berry and discussed, you know, what the future was with building this new sodium chloride plant. Sodium chloride was just being used then for chlorine dioxide bleaching. That's when that process first started, and Old Berry was very instrumental in developing that whole market. And so it was a lot of time spent on that. So it was very, very interesting early experience. Getting out, knocking heads, spending some time in the plant, and then sort of getting me ready to have sales territory.
What did you do after working with that company for a while?
Well, I worked with Old Berry until we Hooker Chemical fired Old Berry in December of 1956. We didn't learn about it until... No, that's not correct. It happened actually, we knew about it in the summer of 56. I think it was tendonitis. Make a long story short, it was adjacent to the Hooker Chemical plant in Niagara on both sides of Buffalo Avenue. So it was a very natural acquisition for them. The English at Albright and Wilson then were having some problems and needed cash. They had an operation in Canada called Verco, and they had an operation in the States, and I think they just decided to selling the product in the States as well, a company in the States. So there was a great deal of uncertainty for a month or two as to what the hell was going to happen. But again, to make a long story short, they decided to integrate as quickly as they could. And they took all of the people. Really, there was no downsizing in those days because the industry was growing at such a fast pace, they were having trouble really finding enough people to do the work. And so they took all of the four salesmen from Old Berry and integrated us into their sales force, and I was moved to Cincinnati, Ohio. Because, interestingly, my territory at Old Berry was Brooklyn, Queens, Western Pennsylvania, Kentucky, West Virginia, Southern Ohio, and part of Tennessee. So I was out in that geography, and I knew a lot of the customers were common customers. And so I took over sales territory in 1957 in Cincinnati, that encompassed Southern Ohio, Kentucky, West Virginia, and spent 7 years as a full-time salesperson down there. During that time, my responsibilities expanded beyond my own territory. We had a fellow in Northern Ohio that got himself in some trouble, and there was some problems up there, so the company decided to give me all the major accounts in Northern Ohio as in addition to what I was doing down in Southern Ohio. And it was probably during that time, coming back to your question, had you thought about management? Now we were in a bigger company. There was more structure. Hooker Chemical then was probably a $200 million, $300 million company. It was in plastics. It was in chemicals. There was diversification, and there was a fairly substantial management structure. You talk about goal orientation and things that are important. My objective, probably after I was in Cincinnati about 2 or 3 years, was to become a district manager and make $10,000 a year. And if that happened, I would be absolutely set for life. $10,000 was more money than probably God had, even at that point in time. Well, fortunately, your goals change, and that was achieved. I became a district sales manager in 1963, and it was an interesting assignment. It was in Philadelphia, and it encompassed everything from Philadelphia to Texas. It was the whole southeast and also into the southwest, and there were four or five salesmen. By now, I had been almost 10 years in the business, and so I had a reasonable experience, and I knew a lot of people around the trade. And so my family and I moved from Cincinnati to Philadelphia in 1964.
You had been traveling most of the time before then?
Yes, I'd done a lot of traveling.
Did your extent of travel change when you became district manager?
No, it still hasn't changed in retirement. I traveled in those early years. You know, as a matter of fact, going back to the Oldbury years, I'd go on the road for 4 and 5 weeks and not come home because they just didn't believe you did that. You just stayed out where you were because transportation was expensive. When we got to the hooker world, living in Cincinnati, I would leave on Monday morning and come back on Friday night. I was gone probably 3 weeks a month. Three weeks a month. I remember in those days, we had only a company car. So my wife did her shopping on the weekends. And there wasn't the running around that we see in these young families that we have now that just bust some kids all over the place. Our kids either walked or they didn't go.
Well,